Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In section 3 of his Inquiry Concerning Human Understanding, David Hume sets out something that is really at the heart of his entire philosophical project, and that is how our ideas are connected with each other. So he starts out by saying that there has to be some sort of principle of connection between thoughts or ideas. And we might want to consider, before we jump into this, what the full range of what he's talking about there. If you've looked at the earlier parts of the inquiry, you know that he makes a distinction between impressions and ideas. And impressions are much more lively. Many of them are sense impressions that are impinging upon us at the moment, right? So I see the light in front of me, you hear my voice, I take a sip of coffee, and I taste that. Somebody pokes me, he's going to use the example of a wound a little bit later on, and hurts me, and I feel the pain. Or it could be that I actually feel what he calls a passion. And earlier on, he used the example of being actually angry with somebody, feeling the sensation, actually not sensation, but sentiment or feeling of rage. So that's impressions. And then we have ideas. And ideas are the things that our mind is stocked with. Impressions tend to become ideas as they linger in our memory or as we call them to mind through remembering them or through the imagination. And they can be pretty much anything that we've had before. So I look at the book and I see the yellow of the cover and the black of the stripe that says Hume in it and the title, An Inquiry Concerning Human Understanding. I take my eyes away from it. I can still retain that idea, which is a complex idea composed of a whole bunch of different things. I can still retain that idea in my mind. And likewise, Hume thinks that we have these experiences, impressions, if you like, of the passions that we feel, and seeing other people feeling those passions as well, and then we have the idea of those. So ideas cover a vast, vast range. It's really anything that the mind can be considering. So then he goes on and he says, it's evident that there's a principle, right? And in their appearance to the memory or imagination, ideas introduce each other with a certain degree, as he says, of method and regularity. They're not purely random. And if they were, then we wouldn't be able to have any sort of coherent notion of a world or experiences over time. And this is not something that Hume himself has to point out. I mean, this has been a commonplace of philosophy since the ancient times. Aristotle drawing the distinction between some animals that have just sense and then responding in an almost automatic way by instinct, and other animals that have memory and then can rely upon it, right? So this is not something radically new. But Hume is very interested in, well, how does this actually work? How do we arrive at there being some sort of method or regularity, which if we examine our own trains of thought or those of others in what he calls discourse, that is talking about things or writing about things, there is a regularity to it. So he says, this is not only in our more serious thinking or discourse, he says it's so observable that any particular thought which breaks in upon the regular tract or chain of ideas is immediately remarked and rejected. So we're having a conversation with somebody or we're thinking to ourselves and we're really plotting something out. Anything else popping up, we're like, that doesn't belong here. Get out of here, right? Or we get distracted by it and we start following its line as well, right? So that happens when we're concentrating, when we're paying attention to what we're doing. It also happens when the mind is wandering, when we're in what he calls reveries, which is daydreaming, right? He says our wildest and most wandering reveries, even in our very dreams, when we're asleep and the mind is just doing its own thing, he says, we shall find, if we reflect, that the imagination ran not altogether at adventures, but that there was still a connection upheld among the different ideas which succeeded each other. So not running at adventures means that it's not just going after whatever happens to run across. It's not pursuing things at random. There is an order to it, even in our dreams. And this is an interesting observation, because think about how weird and wacky, if you remember your dreams, they often can tend to be, right? There is a sort of logic, he's saying, to our daydreaming and our sleep dreaming. So what is this principle? He goes on and he says, were the loosest and freest conversation to be transcribed, there would immediately be observed something which connected it in all of its transitions. Or, interestingly, where this is wanting, the person who broke the thread of discourse might still inform you there had secretly revolved in his mind a succession of thought which gradually led him from the subject of conversation. So when people say random stuff, which, you know, I have a lot of experience of people doing that when I'm presenting or putting out videos and people commenting on them, Hume would say that there's some sort of principle of connection that's not immediately apparent to us, but is apparent to them, and which perhaps they could share with us if they so choose to do so. And then we would see, oh, yeah, I understand how you got from, as we say, point A to point B, even though it didn't seem to fit the conversation. So there's always some sort of connection. He makes one other really, really interesting remark here in the inquiry. He tells us that among different languages, even when we cannot suspect the least connection or communication, it's found that the words expressive of ideas, the most compounded, do yet nearly correspond to each other, a certain proof that the simple ideas comprehended in the compound ones were bound together by some universal principle which had an equal influence on all mankind. Now, he's probably going a bit too far. He's certainly going way beyond the evidence that he has in the linguistic studies of his own time, but he's on to something. If we weaken his claim a little bit to say, yes, there are going to be some ways in which languages do follow along the same basic connections, principles, that's what allows us to translate between languages and to map onto them. Of course, there's going to be important differences, different ways things are divided up, or different associations that are being made, but we can sort of abstract from that at the moment. So now we get to the point where we ask, well, what are these principles of association? And now notice that he's gone from talking about a principle to principles, singular to plural. And he tells us, I don't find any philosopher has attempted to enumerate or class all the principles of association, but this is a subject worthy of curiosity. So he's saying, I'm making a contribution here. What's the contribution? Hume thinks that there's really three fundamental ways in which the mind associates ideas. And this is a classification that others have later on taken up from Hume and applied within psychology. And it does seem to have a lot of things arguing for it. So I do want to say one other thing before we jump into that. Hume doesn't originate this in the Inquiry Concerning Human Understanding, and in fact comes out of the book that he drew heavily upon in order to write that, and that is his Treatise of Human Nature, which he wrote much earlier in his career, and which didn't do quite well. And there in section 4 of book 1 of the Understanding, he talks about the connection or association of ideas in ways that I think is helpful and supplementary to what we're going to look at here. So I'll bring in a little bit of that. So he says that there's three main principles of association: resemblance, contiguity, and cause or effect. And notice, or, not cause and effect, cause or effect, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. Resemblance is when two things resemble each other, right? And he says, well, that's not much of a definition. He's not trying to define anything. He's saying that there's some sort of similarity between them in some sorts of respects. It could be that of structure, or it could be some sort of other associative principle. It could be that they're the same color. It could be all sorts of ways. But the stronger the similarity is, the more it's actually like this paradigm that he has of a picture leading to a thing pictured. So he says that, for example, a picture naturally leads our thoughts to the original. And this happens so unconsciously with us that we don't often take notice of it. Sometimes people have a picture on their desk so they can remember their loved one, or, you know, the trip that they took to this place, or maybe they have a selfie on their desk of them doing something because they're a little bit narcissistic, or they want to remember that time and place. It's a reminder, but it's a reminder of the thing itself, of what it's supposed to be. And if you think about pictures that we have in our, you know, social media and the ways in which we store images, we do in fact have a lot of pictures that don't actually resemble any existing human being. Think about cartoons, for example. But cartoons can also be understood as, you know, resembling somebody in some way. Oh, that kind of looks like this guy. This person resembles Rick Sanchez. And resemblance could be in other ways as well. Super smart, but also kind of a jerk and very cynical. Rick Sanchez, right? If you haven't watched Rick and Morty, then you won't get that illusion, but you can easily look it up. And then when you do, you can like start applying it to people that you're connected to. Contiguity. So that's a term that we don't use an awful lot. Contiguous is the adjective that we would more likely use in the present, but it's still kind of a outmoded word. You could think of this as a connection in space. It can also be in time, but the examples that Hume uses have much more to do with spatiality. So he gives us an example, thinking about one apartment in a building. He says it naturally leads you to thinking about the other apartments in the building. Or if I think about an apartment that's on the Milwaukee River, you know, I think about that apartment building, I think about the river that it adjoins. Now, you could also say, well, wait a second, what if I'm thinking about this apartment and I'm thinking about another apartment that isn't connected to it, but it's the same basic floor plan? Well, that's resemblance. That's not contiguity. So you see the difference between them? Contiguity means it's actually like there together with that thing. Cause or effect. Why or? Well, causes are connected with effects, and effects are connected with causes. But very often, the idea that we have is thinking about one of them, and then that leads us to thinking about the other. And the order could go backwards or forwards in terms of causality. So it could be we see the effect, and we're like, oh man, that must have had this sort of cause. And we think about a whole bunch of possible causes for it. Or we think about a cause, and then we think about the effect that's going to follow from it. And Hume points out in the treatise that sometimes when we're thinking about cause and effect, we think about the thing that could be a cause, a potential cause, and then we think about the effect that will follow from it. So like when we get nervous about something, great example in our COVID-19 worried times, we come into contact with somebody, like we get in the elevator and a whole bunch of people get in and none of them are wearing masks and they're all brushing up against you. You could think, oh crap, I'm going to have to go take a shower and scrub down and I hope that my mask is actually working. What's going on there? You're thinking about them as disease vectors or potential carriers. And maybe none of them are infected, right? But you're thinking about them as a potential cause. And then you're thinking about the deleterious effect that could be had upon you. He talks about a wound. The idea of a wound leads to the idea of pain. And you can think about this when you see somebody else who is injured and you go, ooh, that must hurt. Now, why do you think that hurts? Cause and effect, right? You see the wound, and then you think about what happened to that poor person. And you probably tie it in with your own experience, and you're like, ooh, I've fallen off my bike like that and scraped myself up with road rash. That really stung. And you're drawing on your memory. Now, I will point out as well that Hume, in talking about wounds, it's one of his favorite examples for cause and effect. He also tends to talk about the sword that you see, and you imagine the sword causing the wound. So in that case, the sword is the cause, and the wound is the effect. So we can have all these sorts of chains. I did want to bring in just one little thing from the treatise that I think is helpful to look at here. He says that it's plain in the course of our thinking that our imagination runs from any idea to any other that resembles it, and this quality alone is to the fancy a sufficient bond and association. So whenever we have ideas that resemble each other, there could be a connection in the way that our minds work. He also says that it's likewise evident that as the senses, in changing their objects, are necessitated to change them regularly and to take them as they lie, contiguous to each other, the imagination must by law and custom acquire the same method of thinking and run along the parts of space and time in conceiving its effects. So that tells us a little bit about how contiguity actually works. We see things that are connected to each other, and we see them in time. You know, our senses are moving from one thing to the next, and we thereby arrive at this notion that this is connected to this, not just by, say, resemblance or cause and effect, but by contiguity. We, in effect, place them into a map that we retain in our minds. So Hume thinks that these are the main ways in which our ideas are associated. There can be sort of subdivisions of these, but these are the really general modes of association. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.